Welcome to Fresno's Best Podcast. I'm your host, Jordan Maddox. Today I'm joined by Maria Pacheco, the mayor of Kerman and a candidate for Fresno County Supervisor in District 1. Maria brings a really unique perspective to public service. She's someone who didn't come up through traditional political pathways, but instead through lived experience. From leaving school at a young age to raise a family to working in and around social services, she's seen firsthand how these systems operate and where they fall short. In this conversation, we talk about everything from education and poverty to housing homelessness and the role of county government in delivering mental health and social services. We also get into the differences between rural and urban Fresno County, what she's learned as mayor of Kerman, and how those lessons will translate to a county-wide role. This is a thoughtful and wide-ranging conversation about policy, but also about empathy, representation, and what it means to actually listen to the community. Let's go meet Maria Pacheco. Blessed to infiltrate the pod waves on infinite quests, investigating, making convos to elevate guests. Politics, religion, culture, art, music, show some respect to the best little city left in the U.S. Fresno's best! Fresno's best! Maria, where do you like to eat in Fresno?
Oh, food, my favorite subject. It depends on the day. If it's a Sunday, I like to go to Los Amigos in the morning for their buffet. Have you had it?
I have not. Tell me about it.
Highly recommend. So I've never found a buffet before that has homemade tortillas included in the buffet. So that's, for me, it's all about the tortillas. So I can go out there and have as many as I want and unlimited horchata. I'm all about it.
That sounds dangerous to me. I probably would just be inhaling the horchata the whole time.
Yeah, that sounds amazing. Is amazing. So they have a ton of good food. So you can have menudo, pozole, chilaquiles, all the good stuff. Yeah.
Yes, I've been looking for a good place for chilaquiles recently because I live in the Fresno High area, and I used to go down to Las Mañanitas downtown. And then I guess we've lost both of them. There was one that was like just east of the 41. And then there was the one that was in the old Bitwise building. I really liked the one in the old Bitwise building. Like on Sunday mornings, it felt like I was going to church, which was fun. It's just like everyone showing up after to get brunch or whatever, and really enjoyed it. And I guess I got their notice from the landlords because they were building out a bigger concept food court type thing, but really sad. So I'm on the hunt for good chilaquiles right now.
Oh. Yeah, Las Mañanitas, that was the place to be. Now, I've heard that there's a new Las Mañanitas out in like the north.
It's out in Clovis, unfortunately, for those of us that live on the other side of town. But I will travel for chilaquiles, so that's fine. So I'm sure we could talk about food forever. Let's jump into your story. So one of the questions I want to ask about to start is you left school at 15 to be a parent. And I'm curious, when you kind of look back at upbringing and how that formed you, if you could imagine you had a school that existed, like some schools exist today, with these incredible wraparound services, and you had stayed put in school, do you think your life would have turned out differently? Or do you think you would have been on the same track?
Ooh, that's a tough question, because we would have to get real deep into the reasons I left school. These community schools that are forming, I think, really have a good idea of how to wrap around services for students. And even though I can't speak to really like how it would have changed my life, I can see how it would change a lot of lives in the days that we are in now. I have adopted a little boy from foster care who really struggles a lot when it comes to his behavior in school. And I have thought about how I can get him into one of the community schools that they have now, because he really does need a lot of wraparound services and education and teachers that are mindful of his challenges And so I think that's an issue that we're facing right now is that I don't feel that the teachers have enough training to deal with children who have mental health needs or deep trauma that they're dealing with. And so a lot of his issues that he has in school right now are tied to his obedience, right? They feel he's very disobedient. And when you have something like he does, he has OCD and among other things, it's tough to follow directions when you have an overwhelming need or a compulsive need to touch something or do something or say something. And he truly struggles with the everyday educational system that we have set up right now. And I would love to be able to see him really flourish because he's so smart. And he's such a good kid. And he has such a good heart and he has so much to offer. And I would really love to see him in an environment where he can really grow and really flourish and really be appreciated for who he is and all that he is. And I guess now saying that, when I was young, what I was going through as a child, I had a lot going on at home. And there was a lot that I wasn't talking about. And I'm not sure if those services would have really been able to reach me since I wasn't speaking. I wasn't speaking out on what was happening. But I would hope that if there's a young woman that is going through what I went through as a child, that there would be an educational system that would be able to help her.
I've worked in education for 15 years and have seen a lot of different things in my time. And recently I've seen something interesting that schools are doing, and I'd be curious your perspective. Some of my colleagues recently attended what they called a poverty simulation, where they basically had teachers and administrators be given a set of descriptors about how much money they have access to, et cetera. And they had to seek out social services and kind of experience something that perhaps they come from a different socioeconomic background and try to see the world through that lens. Do you see that as a positive way to help teachers expand their scope of understanding? Or a friend of mine called it poverty tourism, where you're simulating something that someone can't truly understand until they're in it. How do you think about something like that and its role for expanding teachers and schools' understanding?
Yeah, I think that kind of exposure, not just for teachers, but for people in general, would be incredibly beneficial because I don't think that there's enough empathy for these situations that a lot of us come from. I particularly came from a working family, middle class, and so people have a hard time really wrapping their mind around what I had gone through. And coming into social work and talking to the class about, not only is it poverty that causes a lot of situations, there's a lot of other things that go into the situations that we see where children are really acting out and really being rebellious and what those reasons are. Poverty is definitely one of those factors, right? But there's so many factors that go into people's lives and stories. One of the things that I have a really hard time with is that there's dress code, right? In schools, particularly Fresno High School, where you have a very large or a high population of unhoused students. I think you have the highest in Fresno, if I remember correctly. Is that correct?
I'm not sure. I don't. I work in Madera Unified. I don't work in Fresno Unified, so I couldn't.
Well, it was the last time that I see it had a very high population of unhoused students. And so the situation that these students come from and their inability to be able to afford shoes and being dress coded daily because they are wearing shoes that don't have straps or shoes that are inappropriate for PE, I think is really difficult and really challenging for some people who come from a background of privilege. I don't come from a background of privilege. I come from survival, and I've turned that into service. And so I think that it's important to have leadership who is empathetic and understands those types of challenges. My children were born into poverty. I was poor, very poor, raising children. And it was very difficult for us to be able to manage to pay the rent and buy our children school clothes and maintain their wardrobe throughout the year, because kids grow and it's not sufficient enough to just buy them their clothing at the beginning of the year and have that make it all the way to the end of the year. I know when we were growing up, we got, what, 3 pairs of pants if we were lucky? No, I'm sorry, 2 pairs of pants, 3 shirts, a pack of socks, some shoes, and a sweater. And that was what you got to have throughout the entire year. Things were so different back then. And now kids expect to continue shopping throughout the year and wanting to look nice. And when you're coming from a background where you don't have that privilege, it gets really tough. And you got to figure out how you're going to keep up with society, how you're going to keep up with social media, how you're going to keep up with your friends and the expectations that are put on you at school. And not being able to do that, being an unhoused person or being a student in high school that's couch surfing or living from place to place with your parents or just having an unstable background, I think is something that the teachers should have some education in. Teachers should feel some empathy for those students. And I think that there's some schools that are moving in the right direction as far as like putting in like the clothing closets. And one of the things that Fresno High has put in is a clothing closet. And I keep saying Fresno High, I think, because you mentioned that you lived near Fresno High School. But putting in these types of things for the students is something that is incredibly beneficial. And having a program like that where you're going through some kind of simulation or training for the teachers that helps them understand what a true struggle it is to be on these types of subsidies that many families in our area are on, I think is an incredibly important training to have. And I wish that they would, and I wish that there would be even more trainings for the general public to also understand and understand how important it is to donate to these students and donate to these clothing closets and these kinds of projects. We have a young lady in Kerman who tried to do a clothing closet for the Kerman High School. However, we didn't have the storage space. And so she's running it out of her shop. And so a couple times a year, she'll close down her business and open it up to students who are needing help and needing shoes. And last year, she was able to secure about $1,500 worth of brand new tennis shoes for the students who were able to come in and be able to get those items that they needed for free. And then there's even further beyond Kerman, right? There's rural communities, even more rural than the city of Kerman, who really need a lot of help and coats and clothing. We did a coat drive in the dead of winter this year, and we had a young lady who came out in shorts and a t-shirt. And we all gathered some extra items for her to make sure that she had what she needed to keep warm. So there's a lot going on out here, man. There's a lot going on out here, a lot that people either don't see or choose not to see or ignore. And so, yeah, trainings like this could really help.
Given your experiences, I have a question kind of thinking about a county supervisor position. Cities, typically their two biggest budget items are fire and police. And then counties really manage a lot of mental health services, social services, those kinds of things. Yeah. And so a role on as a county supervisor is administering some of these really critical services. And I'm curious how you think your experience, as you said, surviving with young kids, not a lot of resources, how that will affect the way you think about administering social services through your role in the county.
Yeah, there's a lot of issues out there. And I want to change systems, not just survive them. I want to see investment in mental health. I want to see investment in the Department of Social Services. And I remember going into the social work program and being so excited to get my bachelor's degree in social work and finding somewhere in this world where I belong, where I can make a difference and be able to provide for my family. And then finding out what social workers make per year was shocking. I expected to be able to go into school and get a degree and be able to make more than I had been without the degree. And so when I found out the struggle that social workers particularly are going through and the wages that they're making and the impact they have in our world, it was mind-blowing to me. And I had to figure out, why are they so underpaid and overworked?
Yeah, it's crazy. If you get on Transparent California and you look at the salary, consistently the highest paid public employees are usually firefighters, and that's overtime related. But yeah, you compare it to COs, police officers, sheriff deputies, just go down the list. Those social service providers are sadly towards the bottom of the professional class. It's really wild.
Yeah, absolutely. There needs to be more investment there. We have a huge and growing unhoused population. And going around talking to the unhoused, actually, I'm working on a project with Fresno State Transportation Institute on a project based on some conversations that I had with a woman who's unhoused and who lives in front of my office building. And I went out to talk to her and hear her story. She's been unhoused for 4 years. She has a large dog, and so she doesn't qualify for a lot of services, she says, because she has this dog and she won't give the dog up since the dog has been by her side throughout the entire time that she's been unhoused, and this dog is her family. And so hearing her story and hearing what she's going through, being in these spaces where I'm having conversations with the people that are impacted, not just people who are performative politicians who sit at a table with me, and I'm not saying all of them, I'm saying there's some of them, right, who don't really have the intention or the desire to go out and have a sandwich with an unhoused person and to listen to the issues that they're going through, what their story is, and what they truly need. And one of the things about the unhoused population that surprised me that I've learned recently is that many people, when they're first become unhoused people, they don't fall into this situation because of drug addiction. They fall into these situations because they can't afford their rent, or because they were incarcerated and they got out of incarceration and couldn't find a place to stay, or they came out of the foster care system and didn't have any kind of transition. There's so many reasons for people to become unhoused. And I recently learned that many of them don't have drug addictions when they hit the streets. It's the streets. It's where they actually develop their drug addiction. And they use drugs as a tool to suppress their appetite and to higher their temperature of their body, so that when it's really cold outside, then, you know, they don't feel that coldness. And so that was very eye-opening for me. And just...
Yeah, different people need to tell the stories here, because I mean, I think the story you tell is really about the solution you want to serve. And so drugs serve a purpose, right? If I was on the street and I was in distress, I would probably use substance to soothe myself. That's just what people, they're seeking a solution to a problem generally. And the story we tell is going to dictate how we think. And then there's a moral dimension, because you add the drugs, then it becomes a personal choice problem, as opposed to is housing too expensive? Is our supply short? Is the economic environment going to conducive to favorable living conditions? So all those kinds of things play into it. But the story we tell is there for a very specific reason, I'm sure.
Absolutely. And so I think that we need to listen. We need to listen, and we need to figure out the solutions to really help them. And one of the things that I've heard from many people in the unhoused community, from their mouth to my ears, is that these programs that we're putting them in to get clean for 90 days is not long enough. It's long enough for them to just get it out of their system and then go back. And it's too easy for them to fall back into this same addiction. They are looking for longer times. They're looking for an 18-month program or something that can really help them get through the trauma that they're going through. And a lot of them were talking to me about their PTSD and how they've developed PTSD out on the streets, and how it's not treated the same as another person that may have been in the military, right? Coming out with PTSD. And they often refer to their life out on the streets as being in war. and having these types of issues where they're fighting for their life every day and how they want to be seen and they want to be treated and they want to be better and they want to have a place to stay. And what are we doing about that? Or how are we getting them into temporary housing first, right, with some resources, but then how are we also transitioning them and assuring that they have permanent housing solutions out there? When I was 18 years old, I was an unhoused person, and I was able to receive a once-in-a-lifetime housing voucher where they helped me get an apartment. Why is it only once in a lifetime? I'll never be able to use that service again. Hopefully, I'll never have to use that service again, but there's some people that need more than once, and we need wraparound services for them. We can't expect to just put them in transitional housing and that now everything is okay. They're still dealing with an incredible amount of trauma. They need therapy. They need addiction services. They need transportation services. There's so many things that we need to come in with after the fact that they're permanently housed to be able to ensure that they're successful and we are not continuing this cycle. And so there are people out there, there are experts out there that the city and the county can truly benefit from in a partnership. Unfortunately, those people that are coming to mind, and I won't say names, but they're ignored, they're pushed out, they're too loud, they're looking so much for attention, and they're trying to be advocates in such a way that people are put off by that. And for me, I'm not. I want to work with those people. I want to make sure that those people that will hold my feet to the fire are the same people that are sitting on my table, because those are the people that really care. Those are the people that really know what's going on and can get things done. And I want to work with the people that can actually get things done, regardless of whether or not they're looked at as hard or passionate, maybe overly passionate. It doesn't matter. What I want is to really see change. I want to see systematic change that benefits the community. And I'm not seeing that right now.
Let's jump a little backwards and talk about Kerman now. As mayor of Kerman, I've got some questions because Kerman exists within this Fresno County universe.
Yes.
And it's probably for you, a lot of what you're going to take from your time as mayor of Kerman will be applied to the county supervisor role. And I will admit that this podcast is focused more on the city of Fresno than the county of Fresno for a bunch of different reasons. It's for whatever reasons, it's really hard to get county supervisors to do a podcast, but that's a whole different subject matter. How do you think the opportunities and challenges are different for rural Fresno compared to urban Fresno?
It depends on what part of urban Fresno you're talking about, because I think that in this particular district, there are pockets, right? And I think that you can see different places have different interests and in investments and some projects that are quite contentious coming through, and you can see who's moving those things, right? And so out in rural West Fresno County, like Kerman, San Joaquin, Mendota, and Fireball, those are the incorporated cities that fall in this district. The disinvestment that we've seen in our communities is much different than what in urban Fresno. And Kerman is a little in between, right? Because Kerman's kind of where we have our own measures and we really invest in that. And Kerman, like recently, we just had a survey of our roads out in rural, actually in all of Fresno County, we all got scored for a project and Kerman scored the highest. So in that area, in that infrastructure area, Kerman is doing a little bit better than what out in San Joaquin, for instance. San Joaquin has faced incredible disinvestment for many years. And now with having a senator and an assemblywoman who also come from rural communities, they've really put in a lot of effort and attention, and being able to partner with them has been incredible for the city of Kerman and for the surrounding cities as well. And so there's definitely a difference in rural, because we face other barriers that urban Fresno doesn't. For instance, we face the barrier of transportation, right? Like one of the programs that I came in with the intention of building was a transportation program for the students for the city of Kerman to get to Fresno City College. And so that's one of the barriers that I think that not a lot of people really understand about coming from rural towns in just being able to get to higher education. And so for urban Fresno, you have the FACS bus program and other programs that you're able to get around on. And so the city of San Joaquin doesn't have a program like that. They're in the West Hills territory. And so one of the things that I know that you have a councilwoman in the city of San Joaquin is trying to replicate the program that Kerman has for Fresno City College. She's trying to replicate that for West Hills College and to get her students out there. And so I've been talking to her a little bit about that and trying to help navigate that conversation. And there's other barriers too. There's other pockets of people that are, they have a Kerman address, but they're not in the city limit of Kerman, who are out like the in the between Kerman and San Joaquin. There's a community out there that faces challenges where school buses don't pull in all the way to their community. And some of the students have to walk about a mile and a half to get to that school bus, to get to their elementary school, their junior high, their high school. And so those types of challenges you don't really see in urban Fresno.
Yeah, definitely different kinds of challenges. And I wouldn't want my child walking down a mile and a half down those farm roads where people are just going 80 miles an hour to their agricultural job. And it just can be dangerous. Let me ask you this. Where is the priority in Kerman around housing policy? I know that housing policy looks different in rural context versus an urban context. Is the emphasis more on expanding affordable housing options? Is it more on temporary agricultural laborer housing? Like, where are the areas of need in Kerman right now?
Yeah, so there's both, right? You want to have market value homes and you want to have affordable living as well. And so I think that Kerman has done a really good job at balancing them both. So we have both types of projects that are usually happening parallel to each other. We have lots of housing developments coming through that have a blend of both market value homes and also with some affordable houses mixed into that, being cautious of the size of the lots, making sure that we're meeting the state regulations and requirements that they've put down on the cities as far as housing. Want to make sure that we as a city want to make sure that we're advocating for not just family sized homes, but also for smaller units where our seniors can live comfortably in a one bedroom, or our college students, if they were to choose to be independent. We want to make sure that we're fair and that we're thinking about the community as a whole and not just one type of income or one type of family that is in need of homes, but the community as a whole. And I think that throughout the entire state and country is we're really seeing an issue when it comes to affordable housing. I think that the cost of renting a house, or let alone an apartment right now, is incredibly high and unaffordable. I particularly have 4 college students still living at home with us because they can't afford to go out and be independent, live on their own. I understand those types of things. And again, coming from my background and coming from a place where it was very difficult for me to afford to pay rent many times in my life, that, you know, my husband and I had lost an apartment because we weren't able to pay the rent and trying to figure out where we were going to go next or who we were going to stay with until we could get back on our feet. And having that, coming from that type of background, I understand the struggles that families go through, big families, small families, it doesn't matter. And also understanding that we have an aging population who is also struggling, and a lot of our unhoused people are 55 and older. And it's really disheartening. It's really heartbreaking to see our seniors out, some even with disabilities as far as like having a wheelchair or any other mobility device, and not have the house or the help that they need. Because when you don't have an address, you don't qualify for things like IHSS and other things like that. And so those resources become quite limited. So Kerman has done a really great job on balancing the needs of the community as a whole and making sure that we have marketplace housing coming in to ensure that our community continues to grow and thrive, and also being able to bring in housing that is more affordable.
In talking about the developments that are going on in Kerman. I've seen some of them. What do you think would be the impact to the city of Kerman, which is a tight-knit community, at least my understanding? I know people from Kerman and they talk about growing up there and what it's like. If Kerman becomes more of like a bedroom community for commuters into Fresno, what do you think the impact on the city would be?
I think Kerman already has a bit of that kind of bedroom community feel to it. A lot of our community does actually commute out of Kerman. I think that there's two sides to this. Some Kermanites truly love this aspect of this.
Is that the term, Kermanites?
Kermanites, yeah.
Okay, I haven't heard that before. That's great.
Yeah, we enjoy that to go out to urban parts of Fresno or Madera or wherever it is that we're commuting to, and then just being able to come home to a small town and just disconnect and be well. I think that's something that we've all kind of loved about growing up and raising families in the city. We have a lot of restaurants in Kerman, and we have the Walmart and things like that where there's a lot of convenience there. So if we need to get a bite to eat or do a little shopping, we can do that. And then obviously for the other larger places, we do have to come back into Fresno, but or Madera. Yeah, I don't think that there would be much of an impact. So to say, what do you say? There wouldn't be much of an impact since that's the culture. At least it's been the culture through the time that I've lived there, is that commute that we all do, most
Okay.
of us.
Last Kerman question. You're the mayor of a rural community, and we've unfortunately had a dramatic turn in terms of border patrol, ICE operations under this new administration. How have you thought about what levers and tools you have beyond rhetoric? Communication is important, but levers that you have to make sure that your community's safe.
Yeah, so there's an organization in Kerman called Fuerza. It's a grassroots organization of community leaders. There's 13 of us that participate in there, and it's not a nonprofit. They don't want any red tape or strings attached to anything. And so it's a community organization that comes together once a month and meets. And this is one of the topics that we often talk about, right? And is preparation and making sure that there's advocates out there that are able to come out to observe, and working together with organizations like Faith in the Valley and making sure that Faith in the Valley stays aware of any kind of operations or movement that's happening within our city. Fortunately, we've only ever had one incident that happened where we did have to bring Fuerza into the picture and go out and verify if this was an actual situation that was happening. And we haven't had any incidents since. The issue, I think, is just not knowing, right? Is
Yeah,
not knowing
chaos.
what is coming or what the plans are. And so that's the most difficult. But Fuerza is very well organized. They have a system like the old school, what do you call those phone trees? Is that what they used to
Phone
call them?
trees. I'm
Yeah.
not sure.
You would have the top person who calls the two people, and the two people call.
Yeah.
Then, they
From
have,
our childhood, yes.
getting information out old school by telephone. And so they have this system that they operate under to make sure that the information gets out in the quickest way where businesses are notified, other, I don't know, let's see, what there was once where a motel was notified, the management there, the foremen are notified of any kind of situation or presence that is there so that they could be prepared and aware, but also without sending out false information or causing too much of a panic. And I think that's another thing that people need to be very aware of, is that when they see something happening and then they post something on social media that says ICE is here and this is, and they're arresting people, when really it's something that is like gang related. Maybe they have the gang task force out there and they see that something happening at a house and they post these things. It causes a lot of panic, and people are truly traumatized by the situation and the things that are going on. And so forces out there, they're keeping an eye on things. They have a system. They're very organized. I think that having them there gives me a lot of peace of mind because they're giving me information. They're working with Faith in the Valley and then being able to hear back from Faith in the Valley, and Faith in the Valley confirms or deny, or what they tell us, no, actually, that's not what's going on, is truly beneficial and definitely takes a lot of stress and off of my mind and a lot of other people's minds to know that we're being looked out for all of the time. And so there's other rural communities that are trying to mirror those types of organizations where it's just a community members getting together, kind of like a neighborhood watch. Actually, I hadn't thought about it that way until just this very moment. But yeah, it's like a neighborhood watch, but they're watching for something very specific.
Okay. We are going to jump into my favorite section now, which is called overrated versus underrated. Okay. I'm going to throw a bunch of things at you. Feel free to pass on any of these. And I want you to tell me whether you think they're over or underrated and why. Are you game?
Okay.
All right. Let's do it. First one, Me and Ed's Pizza, over or underrated?
Underrated. Especially Kerman. Kerman's Mean Ed's Pizza is by far the best.
What makes it the best?
Though they have been in operation my entire life, I swear they must have the same cook because it doesn't ever change. And I've been to Mean Ed's in other places that just doesn't match up to Kerman's Mean Ed's. Kerman has the best Mean Ed's. I'll challenge anybody. And one more fun fact. I actually met the Ed's owner, the one that owns Mean Ed's in Kerman. And I was sitting at a table with him recently. And he was so impressed because I have Mean Ed's phone number memorized. It's 846-6664. So I've dialed it so many times.
Okay. You never know when you're going to be on a payphone in the middle of nowhere and it's going to be raining. You're like, I need the Mean Ed's number. All right. Next one. The GED route for students in crisis. Is that over or underrated?
Underrated.
Okay.
Underrated by far, and should be offered free of charge to anyone who needs a GED. I truly believe that.
Okay. Next one. And we already touched on this, but I'm curious, and I'm going to add a kind of an added dimension to it. These anonymous ICE activity trackers, there's a big one, like a big kind of like mega site where you can put in anonymous tips. Do you think that is good or bad?
Is it good or bad?
Are over or underrated? Yeah, because I think let me just unload my question, because I know that, and I've heard stories, particularly when I was working at Fresnoland and we had a lot of reporters out in rural Fresno looking at these things, there would be false reporting and the people wouldn't show up to work for 5 days and then their family's missing all this income. And so having a verified approach to gathering information about ICE seems like it's important. But there's all these anonymous sites where people can just submit anonymous claims that they saw ICE or whatever.
Oh, that one's a hard one. When those first came out, I was super excited about them. And I thought this was phenomenal. It was going to help so many people. But then when I realized how easily it was to access and how many people were going to get out on there and play jokes, it turned out to be overrated.
Next one, a sacred cow in Kerman, raisins.
Okay.
Are raisins over or underrated? I don't eat them anymore. Do you?
Oh my gosh.
I
love raisins.
Do you carry around those little boxes of raisins in your pocket? I ate a lot of raisins as a kid and I don't do it as much anymore. I don't know what's
going. I'm going to say raisins. They are underrated. I think people need to really come back to raisins. I think that not only are they nutritious, but they're really good. And they're good for our economy too if you keep buying them. So keep doing that.
All right. And next one. This one's kind of a weird one, but I'm curious your perspective. County islands. So there are these county islands within Fresno where you have sheriff's departments serving these like seemingly urban places within a city. What's your, maybe not over underrated, but what's your thought on county islands?
County islands are interesting because you have this place in the middle of the city that still is able to have horses right next to someone who isn't allowed to have chickens.
Yes, so strange.
Yeah, they are quite strange, actually. But I think for the people who are living on the county island, I think that it's a really neat place to live, right? You just have your own little space and can do what you want along with but still enjoy all of the amenities of urban life.
So they're just lucky, is what you're
I think they're
saying.
lucky to be able to find a little pocket like that. Yeah.
All right, next one is a surefire underrated because there's no way you would say overrated. The Kerman Harvest Festival and Parade.
Underrated. It is
Okay,
the
why should
best.
I go? Tell me why. I'm
Come
not a
on out.
Kermanite. Why should I go?
Oh, first of all, you should come out so you can just feel the community spirit that's out at the Kerman Parade is untouchable. I have gone to the Harvest Festival every year of my life. I've gone to the parade forever. I love coming out there. I love the community that comes out there. You're going to see the Kerman band out there and their drummers, and it's new students every year. I particularly love it because my kids were in the band, and just seeing all of the generations come through and whose kids were are your friends' kids, because they're like little like clones of them now coming
Yeah.
down there. And it's amazing. Kerman Harvest Festival is so much fun. The entertainment's amazing. The rides are great. It's safe. We don't have too many incidents that happen out in Kerman. You come out, you can have a good time, have a beer with a veteran, have some wine with the Chamber of Commerce, dance with the mayor, because I love to dance.
I'm sold. You sold me. It sounds incredible. I'm gonna come. All right, next one. And this one you've gestured at. I'm curious. Big box stores coming to small towns.
Yeah, that's a tough one, right? Because there's a lot of community members that want that convenience of a big box store, but then you have your small businesses that have been there for years and they're family owned and operated. You've known them forever and you want to make sure that they're okay. And I think that for Kerman, we've had our disagreements in how the community should grow or where we should invest, right? Like it was a little contentious bringing Walmart out. Everyone thought that they were going to take them out of business. However, for a small community like Kerman, I think that we've really proved them wrong because of the loyalty from the community to continue to go to the stores that have really given back to the community. We have a lot of stores there that their families are known for the investment that they've put into the youth and to the football teams and the cheerleaders and the crab feeds and all of these kinds of things. And I think that people really appreciate that and they've stayed really loyal to those businesses. And so we haven't seen that they haven't been able to continue to grow and thrive there. But at the same time, we do have community that is looking for those types of investments to also come into the city, right? They want to see progress. They want to see growth. And then there's a lot of people that want to see us stay a tiny town. So that one, it goes both ways. There's an argument for both sides, for sure.
I'm sure it depends on who you ask. I live like perfectly midway between a Deli Delicious and a Moto Delicatessen, which is a locally owned and operated sandwich shop. And I'll spend
Oh,
a
I
little bit
love them.
more at Moto, but I get a higher quality sandwich and I also get the personal touch of the living in the community. If you're the small guy, what you have to lean into is personalization and personableness, like connecting with people, like really building yourself and making yourself key to the community. And it's easy just to say, oh, Walmart's evil, and maybe there's a discussion there, but Walmart's this bad guy, and we don't, and I'm just this poor kind of victim here. But you do have agency, and there are ways to think about how to
Yes.
adapt your business to changing times, because everything's always going to change, and that's just the world, right? It's what.
Entrepreneurship is definitely part of the American dream. And I want to see more people invest in themselves and be able to build that for themselves. But I also would like to see that we have some, and those big corporations, they bring in a lot of sales tax dollars, and that helps us grow our schools and other projects. So
Yeah,
have to be
everything's more complicated than just, oh,
Yeah.
big is bad, small is outdated. It's always more
Yeah.
complicated. All
But
right.
I think that the community, the voice of the community needs to just be heard. They need to be heard, not just there, not just
Yeah, I agree.
brushed off.
Let's jump into a few more county questions before we close up. There's this tension right now, particularly as it has been broached again and again with things like SATA, where you have this tension between our agricultural economy and the rapid residential development and expansion around the periphery of cities. How do you think about that tension? And I guess my question, if I were to not be doom and gloom, but if I were to say, let's say that residential development continues at a steady pace, we keep expanding our cities, keep building tract home developments, how do you think that will impact our economic outlook for the county that so relies on agriculture?
Yeah, agriculture has been incredibly impacted already with our water issues. And so I think that first and foremost, I mean, beyond, there's so many different things that are impacting ag, right? There's this the development, right? But I think that if we don't fix water issues for ag, like these types of issues for building, I mean, depends. Are you building on fallow land? You're building on good ag land? What are we talking about? But it's water is where it is for them. And I think
in conversations with several leaders in the water community, I think that I now have a really great understanding of what we can do in leadership to try and move in a direction where we can work on these water issues. And then for the building issues, that's just another another added layer. And I think that ag particularly is just, I just feel like the whole world is like falling down around them. They have so many issues going on. And my heart goes out to the farmers who have their generations in to these farms where their grandfathers and their fathers and now themselves are just pouring their life and their blood out on. And now they have these water issues, and then they have these development issues, and then they have the fallowing and all of these types of things that are happening to ag. As far as like urban sprawl, right? I would prefer to see that money and those investments happening within the city. I don't think that we need to be spending more money sprawling out right now when there's so much need within the city. And there's so much potential and opportunity to really work on infrastructure and things that are already in existence, right? There's been so many communities that have been crying out for investment for so long. I don't think that's the right move to make. And also for ag, I think ag hold on to what they have right now. And I think that we need to really focus on helping them hold on to that, right? Making sure that they have the resources to continue to farm and continue their legacies and continue putting food on the table and continuing to provide jobs and long-term jobs, not short-term jobs, right? Long-term good jobs where people can put food on the table and we can continue the culture that we've known for so long. And be able to further advocate and help them when it comes to other needs that they have.
I'm going to ask you now one that's a tricky topic to discuss, and it's another institution that, in the role as county supervisor, you would be tasked with administering to a certain degree, which is the county jail. It's been dealing with overcrowding issues for a long time, and it's not popular to say you want to build additional cells or expand the size of an incarceration facility. But at the same time, overcrowding issues cause health problems. We saw during COVID that there were massive outbreaks in the county jail. And if you're crowded, the incidence of violence goes up because people don't have as much personal space. So there's a few different ways to look at this problem. One is expanding the scope or size of a facility. The other is finding other alternative pathways when people get involved in the criminal justice system, more mental health services, et cetera, et cetera. Sure, I know which direction you're leading, but I'd curious, maybe if you could address kind of the overcrowding issues and then think about alternatives.
The overcrowding issues has a lot to do with the alternatives. There's really no way of separating the two because when you criminalize a person for being unhoused and they're getting picked up on warrants because they weren't able to make it to their court appointments and now they're adding to that overcrowded jail, that's an issue. I think that a lot of these issues can be solved with mental health services, wraparound services that we can tap into rather than putting people in jail. I think that there's a lot of other issues that are happening when it comes to our jails and our overcrowding that has a lot to do with social services, has a lot to do with with our social workers and making sure domestic violence is one of those things that we have going on where I feel like, what is the word? When you get ahead of it, what is the word that I'm looking for?
Upstream,
Preventative. There's
preventative,
so
yeah.
many preventative services that can be in place so that we can get ahead of these types of issues. And so we're not seeing that overcrowding in the county jails. And I can't stress enough about the investment we need to make in mental health. I think mental health is the number one issue that needs investment right now so that we can work on the overcrowding of the jail, that we can work on for the unhoused population, so that we can with there's so much, not enough time to go over all of them, but definitely mental health services would help with the overcrowding issue at the county jail. A
Okay.
hundred percent.
So you're running for Fresno County Supervisor representing. What's your kind of, I don't want to use the word diagnosis, but you're coming into an institution that has had a lot of challenges with inability to change, adapt. It is small C conservative in their approach to government and management. What do you believe you're going to add to the county supervisors and that role? And where do you think are areas where it needs to change or adapt?
I think that what I'm going to be able to bring to this role is the voice of the community. And I think that coming out to the community, listening to the community, and bringing their voices back, being I'm not the person who is going to make the changes. The community is who's going to be making the changes. And I think that's what we lack in leadership, is leadership that's willing to actually come out and work with the community on things that they find important. The community has a lot more challenges than what is being advocated right now from the seats that are being or that are being held right now. I
So
think
it's a lack of engagement. They're not getting out of those seats and going into the community to find the issues. That's what you would say.
And so bringing that community voice with me, making sure that the community knows and feels secure that they have a seat at the table because I do. And so I think I don't feel that way right now that I can go, that I have a voice at the table. And so I think that making sure that I help the community in getting their concerns heard and met. And the policy overall through Fresno County is important to me because I know the consequences of broken systems, right? I've lived through all of that. Again, I didn't come from a place of privilege. I came from a place of survival. And understanding and having those lived experiences and bringing those lived experiences to this seat, I think is incredibly important too. Because the way that I look at things, the way that I hear things, the way that I make decisions are based on those lived experiences and those conversations with the community, right? I'm not trying to serve a 1%. I'm not trying to serve a status quo. I'm not here. I'm here to agitate the system a bit. I'm here to really give a hard look at the investments that we've been making. The budget is a reflection of our values, right? And I want to bring a perspective to this seat that shows that has someone there in the seat that truly has a respect and a value for the community and for the needs of our community. From the most vulnerable, from the people that have the least voice, the people that live their life on benches and in tents by the railroad tracks that are never heard or listened to. I want to bring their voices to this seat. Our children that are in these educational systems who are in the principal's office every day because they're not heard, because they're misunderstood. I want to bring their voice with me because I understand it, because I was that child and I have that child. I want to bring that child with me. I want the young women who have been through domestic violence, who have lived through SA, who have gone through all of these other traumas. Right? Who need a representative that understands how important it is for a single person with children to be able to afford a home to be safe in. She should be heard. She should be valued. And she can find her voice in someone like me.
Yeah.
For the young men who are in college, who are trying to get their lives together, who would like to be independent, but can't afford to learn how to be independent because rent for a one-bedroom apartment is $1,200 a month. I want him to know that I know he's there. I know he exists. I know that what his needs are, and I will bring his voice with me to that seat. To the people who have gone so long that they're viewed but not seen, they're heard but not listened to, I want to bring them with me to this seat. That's the change.
Said, we conclude these podcasts each time with book recommendations. What are a few books that are important to you that you'd like to recommend to listeners?
Oh my gosh, important to me or just good stuff?
Or just good stuff, whatever. Yeah. If it's Colleen Hoover or the Bible, whatever you want.
Oh my gosh, I love to read mystery books. I just finished reading The Housemaid by Freida McFadden.
Is that as a result of watching the movie or
No,
prior
I
to that? Okay.
actually d I haven't watched the movie. I've
Okay.
only ever read the books, and I'm looking forward to watching the movie, but I hope it's not. For me, okay, so Hunger Games, the book franchise and the movie franchise, they are on a different, like, different levels. And I'm hoping that The Housemaid doesn't let me down
I
because the
heard it's
books were
juicy. I
really
haven't seen it either. I heard it's juicy and fun. That's what I've
good.
heard. Yeah.
Yeah. I also recently read I'm Not the Perfect Mexican Daughter
I've
by
actually taught
Kathleen
that in a
Turner.
class. It's a fantastic book. Yeah.
It is a really good book. I read that recently. I also read For Brown Girls with Sharp Edges and, oh, what's the name of the book? Sharp Edges and Something Hearts. I can't remember. What is the name of that book? Hold on. Oh,
I'll look it up. I'll find it.
yeah, that's a really good book too. Yeah, so I love books. I love to read. It disconnects me from the world sometimes and just lets me go to another place where I'm not stressed about everything that's going on. And I never in a million years, Jordan, thought I was going to be in politics. Never, ever. I got into politics because I wanted to get a transportation program going for the students. And I stayed because I realized that there was a lack of re representation and a lack of lived experience. And so I stayed here thinking that I can serve a couple of terms as mayor and then go back into social work and doing this other kind of work. And now being here and going up into another level of service, I would have never in a million years thought that this would be my life. And going into all of this and living under a microscope and going through all of the criticism that I go through is worth to me in the end being able to be the change that I would like to see and being the change for the community. So this is an incredible ride. It's an
Well,
incredible
we
journey.
definitely need more politicians that aren't just climbing the ladder and one step after the next, and everything's planned out, and it's more about career than impact. And yeah, I think that's usually a good sign if you accidentally fall into something like this. Now, if people are interested in volunteering, getting involved, connecting with you in other ways, where can they find that information? And do you have any events coming up that you'd like to share about?
You can email me at mariapachecofor@gmail.com and I can get you the information to future events or if you'd like to volunteer or anything like that, or if you'd like to learn more about me, you can go onto the website.
And they can also probably get like a yard sign or something there as well,
Oh,
right?
absolutely.
Yeah, those yard signs. This is always that fun season where there's one that's in Old Fig, which is just a little north of where I am, where you have two neighbors that have competing yard signs for District 7 City Council, and they've angled them in like aggressive ways at each
Yeah,
other.
the sign wars is what we call them. Sign
Yeah. So,
wars have begun.
yeah, it's fun. Join the fun, everybody. All right. Maria Pacheco, thank you so much for taking the time to talk with me.
Thank you so much, Jordan.
Fresno's best.
Thanks for listening, everyone. As always, you can support this podcast by leaving us a rating and review or by making a financial contribution at our Patreon page, which is www.patreon.com/Fresno's best. We'll see you next time.